You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Of To the Journey.
To the journey!
We are returning to our series on aliens and the enemies specifically. This week we've got some real baddies. I mean, these are about as bad can get, right?
Yeah.
Or so it seems.
Well, that's just it. We don't totally know what they're up to, right?
At least not in their first appearance.
No.
No, they're certainly very cryptic when we first see them, so we are discussing species 8472 today. And as we might all recollect, we first got to know these aliens in Scorpion because they were beating up the Borg.
Yeah, that was pretty scary in a way.
That's pretty intense, that 20-second teaser that we have for Scorpion Part 1. We see our Borg cube, we hear, we are the Borg, you'll be assimilated, we're all used to that. But what we're not used to is the Borg blowing up.
I absolutely love that moment. I remember when that was on the air live. I was watching it with my parents, and I was off in the kitchen fixing a sandwich, and I missed it. All I heard was, you know, the goings on, like the, you know, like, we are the Borg, blah, 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 blah. And then I hear the explosion, but I also hear my dad going, oh. I'm in the kitchen like, what happened? He's like, the Borg are destroyed. And I was like, I missed it. And he's like, yeah, you did. And this was well before DVR. So I had to wait until the episode was finished recording till I could go back and watch it.
Oh, man. Well, at least you were recording it, right?
Oh, of course I was recording it.
Yes. I watched this when it was aired live too. And this for me was kind of that. What it is, or it's kind of that moment that's the best of both worlds for a lot of people. You know, that cliffhanger where Riker says fire and Picard has become Locutus and he's assimilated. And Scorpion for me is that moment. Because I watched that live as opposed to Best of Both Worlds. I caught up.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't see it live. I heard my dad scream at the TV when he heard that episode. But that was before I was really, really into Star Trek. So I missed that. But Scorpion for me was just...
Yeah, I feel like Species 8472... Oh, actually, I should say the Borg were kind of like Worf in this situation, where if Worf gets beat up by an alien, you know it's tough.
Yeah.
Exactly.
True. Yeah.
And so that was this parallel.
Yeah, at this point, the Borg were complete baddies. They were unstoppable. And I love the way that we were introduced to the Borg in Voyager with that teeny little ending scene in Blood Fever. We knew it was coming, and boy, did they make it big. But what made it even bigger was Species 8472 and this war going on between them.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to be Debbie Downer or something like that, but... To me, the build-up to the episode was more powerful than what actually happened. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, because I thought, well, see, I wasn't watching it like you guys were. I wasn't watching it when it was actually happening. I watched it in the here and now. And yeah. I thought the CGI was super cheese. And then and then when Harry is lying in sick bay after being attacked and he has the ramen noodles all over his face, I'm kind of going, all right, okay, that's
oh
a little
God.
Scary. I don't know. It got better. They got scarier when, you know, it had to take this, that, and the other to beat them. But, yeah, I mean, they had their moments, but I think the hype was more to me than... the actual delivery.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I suppose doing a binge watch, as we do with pretty much all TV nowadays, is a completely different context from whether if you had to suffer through a whole summer not knowing what was going to happen in part two.
Yeah, see, I didn't have that, so there's no suffering going on. It's like, oh, is that what? Okay, all right.
Lucky you. So let's talk for a moment about what we know about Species 8472, because we mentioned earlier that they had a very cryptic entrance. All we knew is that they had a way of defeating the Borg.
Well, the Borg believed they were the kind of the crux, not the crux, but like the epitome of a biological entity. Like they wanted, like, their bodies with Borg implants in them, basically.
Yes.
And I thought that in itself was really cool. Like, I mean, I just thought they were so alien. I mean, they weren't bipedal. They weren't humanoid. They didn't have speech. And they lived in fluidic space. And also they were a complete CGI character.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I'm glad you mentioned that. This was the first alien race to do so.
That I think that we saw, like, repeatedly. I think we saw some CGI aliens here and there.
But I mean, exclusively.
Yeah, yes, you're absolutely right. Exclusively CGI, yes.
Yeah, I believe this was the introduction of that to Voyager. And as you said, they're completely alien. I don't know if they could have pulled off these aliens without CGI. I mean, could you imagine putting somebody in a costume with the look and feel of these guys and have it pass off as real? I don't think so.
It would have looked like a Muppet, probably. So.
Yes.
I think I saw, like, a picture. I don't know if it's real, but it was like a pre-concept design of Species 8472, and it looks like a dude in a Muppet costume with a fro. Like, it's so horrible that I just can't believe that it's real. And you know, Memory Alpha is just like Wikipedia. You know, anybody can upload stuff to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so was this a Photoshop, maybe? Because I have a hard time imagining Species 8472 with a giant fro on its head.
I didn't read the whole article, so I don't know if I'm misreferencing it or anything like that. But seriously, everybody, go to the Species 8472 page on Memory Alpha and check out this photo. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you see it.
And then let's discuss it on the forum, because we need to get the forum screaming again.
Slow
down a little. Let's talk about this. This is as interesting of a thing as, as we're going to get with nothing terribly new coming out of Star Trek these days. Let's hash this out. 8472 froze.
8472's fros. Well, one thing that the Borg couldn't do to their fros is assimilate them, which was part of their charm. So Species 8472 was the epitome of biological evolution to the Borg, and they could not assimilate them. So it was like that, you know, the things that they can't, even the Borg are guilty of wanting what they can't have.
Absolutely. Yes, and one thing I did like about Species 8472 was the fact that they were so advanced that even the Borg could not assimilate them.
Yeah. And their whole whatever mission, methodology, whatever, was to purge the galaxy of impurities. I mean,
yes.
What is it, like the Nazis of fluidic space or whatever? Weird. But
well, see that's okay. That's what I'm glad you brought that up, Lori, because I want to talk about that, because they said that they wanted to purge the galaxy of all inferiority and all that business.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Kes read, you know, telepathically from them. You know, did they mean, like, they just wanted to purge the galaxy, or did they really just want to purge the galaxy of the Borg? Because later on, we find out that the Borg were the aggressors. They went into fluidic space to try and assimilate them. So weren't these people, if you can call them people, justified in their actions trying to destroy the Borg? Because, you know, Janeway, of course, self-righteously helped the Borg defeat Species 8472 because she thought it was the larger threat. But in essence, Species 8472 was just trying to defend themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Am I off base here? Or
no.
Is that what we came to realize later on and Kes just completely misinterpreted them?
I think with what knowledge she had at the time, they seem like the bigger threat. Like, that's the difference between Scorpion Part 1 and Scorpion Part 2. Because then you learn that the Borg attacked first. And then it all changes from there.
Right.
So I totally agree with you, Tristan. They were just defending themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So
oh yeah, definitely.
I don't blame them one bit.
And I don't know, that's that you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, once you get in the middle of that situation, because you're going to die if you don't do one thing or the other. So, I don't know. She should have just turned around and went back the other way. No, I'm kidding. I never would have gone home.
Well, that's what Chakotay wanted for a little while.
Yeah.
But then, of course, we know that Chakotay would love to settle on a very nice planet with Catherine any day.
And a monkey.
And a monkey. Yes. Maybe many monkeys.
Definitely the monkey.
One thing that I really love, I am a sucker for this, and this happens in lots of different types of sci-fi, but bioships. Absolutely love that kind of stuff when they integrate.
This was another great feature.
Yeah, technology and biology. And not like in a cyborg way, but just their technology is biology. That is just so cool to me.
Yeah, it's kind of like a different spin of what the Borg wanna be.
Yeah.
Again, very advanced. It's just completely synergized into their very existence. Yeah, very cool. Now, I want to know from you guys, aside from what we've already discussed, we don't know that much more about Species 8472 because there's only really about 4 episodes where they are somewhat featured. You've got Scorpion 1 and 2, Prey, and In the Flesh. That's really about it.
I could have sworn there was more.
They are mentioned in other episodes, but I don't think they make any huge impact.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I think they're really only mentioned in one. Well, I mean, we see them only in one other episode, and that was just a holo image, and that's in Someone to Watch Over Me, and that's where we find out that they have 5 sexes.
That's true. We do learn that, and then we don't really learn anything further about that. I guess it's good since it's a family show.
And we don't know. We have no idea how the Doctor found that out.
Well, I'm sure he studied some anatomy when he had a member of Species 8472 in sickbay.
But how do you find that out?
He asked.
Like, yes. Well, okay. Was Someone to Watch Over Me after In the Flesh?
I believe so.
Okay, well, if it was after In the Flesh, then he probably was able to talk to some of them about their biology.
Sure, right.
What did you guys think of In the Flesh? Because I freaking love that episode.
Yes, very good episode.
It's funny. It makes me laugh.
It is. You know what I loved the most was the member of Species 8472, whoever was shaped into Boothby, really studied up on Earth slang. He really got into it. You could tell. I mean, he was spot on, and damn, was he funny.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that guy. I want to go to coffee with that guy and just hear him talk.
Like, I love how he says, he's like, I said, sit down or I'll knock you right on your human butt.
Yeah, exactly.
I like Boothby, but I feel like he's overused in the show. And maybe I'm alone in this, but it's just impossible that he's Chakotay's trainer. He was a mentor to Patrick Stewart. Like, he helped Catherine Janeway in some sort, like, he helped her in some way. And maybe I'm wrong, but I just feel like this guy has to be like 152.
He's the Yoda of Starfleet. That's
there you
is.
Go.
Oh, I like that even better than what I was going to come up with. And I was just going to say he's the Guinan of Starfleet Academy.
There you go.
I think he's both. He is Guinan and Yoda put together. And we all know that you can live longer in Federation days. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he can be, you know, like Chakotay's boxing trainer and Janeway's dancing instructor.
Whatever else. Yeah. The guy, I mean, he's much more than a gardener. He can do anything. He's kind of this institution to Starfleet Academy.
So I want to know, like, in the Flesh, how did they find out all that information about Starfleet Academy? Like, how did they do their research, you know?
Oh,
was it all from Voyager's databanks? Or, you know, did they actually go to Earth and scout and then, you know, just, like, practice someplace else?
That is such a good question, and I don't even think they answer it in the episode.
No, they really don't. They don't address that.
If that was the case, if they can get to the Alpha Quadrant and back super fast, because, you know, I'm sure, like, in fluidic space, maybe there's an entry point and exit point that are, you know, that aren't relative to our space-time. I totally would have pursued that if I was Janeway. Like, hey, can you help us out? Like, is there any way we can, you know, go through the bypass of fluidic space?
Yeah, because they've been in fluidic space. It didn't kill them.
Right.
So it's totally possible. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, my brain is a little foggy. I don't know if this happened in another episode or if it's in the novels. Take a drink.
Of course.
But I could have sworn I read something about Species 8472 did go to the Alpha Quadrant, and they did somewhat carry out what they did in the flesh, where they had essentially put imposters into Starfleet. Now, I'm thinking it might be the novels.
I know the shapeshifters did that. The founders did in Deep Space Nine.
They did do that, but
I'm thinking maybe
are you confusing the two? Or?
I have no idea, man. Somebody set me straight here, right into the show, please. Go to trek.fm/contact, select To the Journey, and let me know if I'm totally talking out of my butt or if there is something to this, because I honestly just don't remember. I have to think it's the novels because it's been a while since I've read any of them. The last one I read was Eternal Tide, and that was so last year, so heaven forbid if I remember it. But I just think there's something to that. I swear it's not just the shapeshifters who did that.
I know that they've appeared in several video games. I know that they appeared in the short story Places of Exile in the Myriad Universes. And I know that they're in Star Trek Online, and that's actually where we find out their name. Their name is the Undine.
Hmm. Oh, okay, cool. I did not know this.
I think that's how you pronounce it. I played it years ago, but I don't anymore. But yeah, so like they're called Undine, but this is just in online. This hasn't been in the show or in a movie or anything like that.
That would be much more practical than saying Species 8472 or
I know,
a
right?
member of 8472. I thought that was really awkward when watching in the flesh.
They should have come up with a name.
Right. Yeah. Why didn't somebody or why didn't some member of eight or Species 8472 say, that's not who we are. We call ourselves the whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then they start screaming in a tone that we can't understand.
Yes, they squeal. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. So what did y'all think about, like, the fact that Janeway wants to help these creatures and won't let Seven kill it, and then they end up copying Starfleet and then talking about going to the Alpha Quadrant and taking it over? Is that, like, just another one of those Voyager's unintended consequences kind of things, or?
Well, I really liked it. Yeah, I really liked that it didn't have a happy ending at the end of Prey. I really like that Seven of Nine made the wrong decision. Well, I mean, she thought she was making the right decision, but it wasn't it wasn't the Starfleet decision. She disobeyed her captain, and a sentient being was put to death. I mean, that is just amazing. I mean, not every Star Trek episode does that.
Yeah.
No.
You know, most of the time, you either have a reset button or you have, like, where the good guys are victorious or they find a way to bend the bad guys to their will. But no, like, Seven of Nine's like, nope, this is what's going to happen. And, only in the Janeway-Seven of Nine relationship would Seven of Nine still be allowed outside of her quarters if that happened.
Yeah, seriously, she would have condemned anybody else to the brig and never let them out. She would have thrown away the key.
And strip them of every single rank like the Equinox crew.
That's right. She would have pulled off their pips, provided that Seven had pips. I don't know if she would, like, pull off the cat suit and throw her in, like, an orange jumpsuit or what. I don't know. Some sort of dramatic thing. I'm not sure.
The comm badge. I think that was easier to
the comm badge.
There
she will dramatically remove the comm badge. Yeah, you know, one thing I really did appreciate is that there was a little bit of continuity. There were some consequences for things that happened with this race, because they did not forget and they did not forgive. And they were definitely on guard. I mean, they were preparing for full-out invasion. Mm-hmm. They thought humans were just evil, destructive people, and they had to prepare themselves for the worst. And they did. And I'm talking about in the flesh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, It's nice to see this kind of continuity. And like you said, I mean, we really only see them in three episodes if you count, you know, Scorpion as one.
Yeah.
And it's nice because we establish them in Scorpion and how bad they are and their agenda. And then we get to see them on an individual basis in Prey, where it's just one lone. And we get to see a melding of Hirogen and 8472. Now that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Double baddies.
And then in the flesh, everything that they did in Scorpion and Prey was reflected in the flesh, and they had to deal with those consequences.
Right.
And it was just great. I thought it was good writing on every single one of those episodes, and this might be the one alien that has the best episode, like the best episode average out of all of Voyager.
Yeah. You know, that is very possible.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's an absolute truth, but I think it has some merit and has a chance to be defended.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I guess it varies, of course, depending on how much you loved the Borg.
Yeah. Well,
but you know what? If I were to watch every Species 8472 episode, and then, assuming I had a whole day to do nothing but watch Star Trek Voyager, watch all the Borg episodes, I would be much more, I think, excited and entertained, and Species 8472 episodes would hold my attention just because, for one thing, there's way too many Borg episodes, but Species 8472 never got weakened by overuse.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. I wish they would have done what they did for 8472 with the Vidians. That would have been kind of cool. I mean, they just kind of went out. Bye, see ya. And you know they got cured, but I wish we could have seen more of them.
Mm.
Seen more of the Vidians.
Right.
Yeah.
That's just me.
They had a decent arc, but they were really fluid with Species 8472.
Mm-hmm.
They really did do a nice job of stringing all this stuff together. For people who say that Voyager has no continuity, look at these episodes.
Yeah.
You are wrong in this instance. Because there is no reset button. Hallelujah! How about that? It's amazing. But you know what else kind of amazed me is I did watch these four, however many you want to count them, episodes, all in one little fluid marathon with a friend of mine. Her name is Bree. Hi, Bree. She listens to the show. And I thought, for four episodes, we didn't get to know very much about this race. It seemed like there just wasn't, for as good as they are, we didn't learn a lot of detail. Now, is the mystery of who they are and what they are better than learning everything about them?
What kind of details were you wanting?
That's just it. I don't even really know.
Because if you compare them to the Melon and the Vidians and aliens like that, I mean, we got as much detail out of them as we did with 8472. I feel like maybe only the Borg and the Kazon would be more fleshed out. In my opinion, and Borg is because of roots in TNG, and the Kazon just because they overused them in the first seasons. I mean, because think about it. I mean, we know what their ships are like. We know that they, what their technology is like. We know what they look like. We know that they have five sexes. And with the Vidians, I mean, we just mainly knew about the disease and their culture of going two by two and trying to defeat the disease, but we don't really know anything about the Vidians culture or the Melon culture except for the standard alien answer, we're a society of artists and scientists.
This is true. I guess we know that their culture was ravaged by this outbreak that they can't control. I don't know. I just felt like, I guess, historically, we don't know much about how they became to be who they are. I don't know. And then yet, a part of me, as I think about it, thinks that's okay. Mystery is good. And sometimes with an enemy you don't know that well, that is what makes them so scary. You don't know what they're going to do because you don't know them that well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was the intent. I don't know.
Sure. The mystery is part of what adds to the mystery itself, I guess.
Yeah. But I guess I just didn't feel like I knew much at all about them. And I was, formulating what we were going to say on the podcast. And I'm just thinking, there's not that much here, is there? There is, but there isn't. I mean, there's some great moments. But just if you put information down on paper, facts, what have we got? Not that much.
One fact that we do have is that they are Kate Mulgrew's personal favorite Voyager villains.
That's right. They are. Yes.
Which I love hearing that stuff about the people who actually performed or created, like what their favorites and least favorite parts were.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they had to be on set all the time. And I find it interesting that she says that these are her favorite because these are CGI aliens, as we mentioned before. It's not like she could look at them face to face.
Yeah. Yeah. It's she never had a scene with 8472 except for, you know, like the Boothby ones, you know, the
hol- right.
the people in human form. So, yeah, it's interesting that she chose them.
I don't know about you guys, but I think that's pretty much it. I think we can start to wrap up. Tristan, what have you got for final thoughts on Species 8472?
Well, I think, you know, we summed it up just in the episode. I think these are great characters. I think that they are strong aliens. They're unique. It's something that's never been done before in Star Trek. And I love the technological advancement in utilization of CGI. I liked the mystery that you talked about. I liked the I thought the episodes were good. I mean, this is a species that we can explore more, as we've seen in video games and novels. And I just, you know, when I list my favorite aliens, before tonight, I probably wouldn't have put 8472 near the top, but after talking about them, I kind of have to.
They are pretty darn good. They really are. They're in great episodes. They're awesome baddies.
Yeah. Lori, what about you?
I liked that they added the concept of fluidic space. I thought that was really interesting to think, okay, there's space and then there's more space. And these, they can, I don't know, it really took some incredible weaponry to get rid of them. That was exciting. And like I said, the buildup was really scary. I like that. I like any sort of horror, whatever you've got going on, like that big mass of Borg that they encounter when they go on the first Borg ship before they've seen 8472. I guess it was Chakotay, Tuvok, and Harry, and there's the Borg in one big blob. That was scary. That was like something out of a horror movie. I like that. I like that about them.
That's something I want in my living room.
Yeah, a Borg blob of faces and parts.
It's just, it's so creepy and complex and funky. That's why I want it. I don't have a whole lot more to add, you guys. I like Species 8472. I find them incredibly entertaining. And on top of everything else you said, I would just say that they're freaking awesome. How about that for a glib description, huh?
Well, I think you're right. It wasn't until we did this episode and I did my research where I realized that this would be fun to talk about. And I just want to let you guys know, you and the listeners, that this isn't the only thing that we've been talking about at Trek.fm this week. So here's a quick look at what you might have missed elsewhere on our network. Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Looking for Parmok in all the wrong places.
Well, and you also get the feeling here that she's only... Worf really is only being rejected because she's not interested. It has nothing to do with whether or not Worf is Klingon enough or any of that. She's just not interested. She's interested in Quark.
Earl Grey.
Romulans on TNG.
You know, it's this TV trope of an actor playing their own descendant or... you know, it doesn't make sense. Okay, fine. If you want to...
Right, because Data never plays his grandfather or great-grandfather or own descendant, but, you know, that's a terrible storyline.
Or Michael Dorn.
The Ready Room.
Well, I think after what he went through with the Zindi, you know, you see he's become very jaded. He's very cynical about things, and it would be easy for him to stay in that place, and it would continue to grow, and he would become nothing like the person he was, and even lose sight of the person that he was and never be able to get back there.
To the journey!
Voyager's Funniest Moments.
They're seeing Sandrines for the first time, and you see that pool shark guy who is such a chauvinist pig jerk, who says something to the effect to B'Elanna, something like, treat a lady like a tramp and a tramp like a lady. It works every time. And she says, Paris, did you program this guy? And he's like, yeah, why? She said, he's a pig and so are you.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Battlestar Galactica.
But with the new series, it really tried to delve much deeper into the social commentary. You know, in a lot of ways, I think it was an excellent portrayal of a post-9/11 world. And I think it touched on a lot of aspects of our society.
Warp 5.
Hoshisato.
I'm not so sure that I can relate to the background as providing an explanation for her personal insecurities. I perhaps wondered if a part of that, you put her on Earth in her element, doing her teaching, working with languages in that safe environment. I don't think she would have the same level of insecurity.
Trek news and views.
Barge of the Dead.
So to actually get a character episode that doesn't just explore B'Elanna but explores the Klingon mythos at the same time. I mean, that was two for one.
Literary Treks.
David R. George III, Revelation and Dust.
And it feels like an evolution for Starfleet as well in the way that they built a starbase.
Well, I'm glad that came across because that was sort of one of the things that I was going for. You wanted it to be an evolution in Starfleet's construction of starbases. Mm-hmm. It should be something brand new. And because it's an important station, because it's in an important location, it really needed to be, I thought, a grand station.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Doesn't that sound interesting? I think it sounds interesting. And you should check out these shows because we get a daily Trek fix if you go to Trek.fm. You can catch them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream them or download the files straight from our website. All you have to do is visit trek.fm/PD, and there you can get access to all of the links.
Huzzah!
Huzzah!
Yes.
Sorry, I think you have a shout out for us. Is that right?
I do. Yes, I would like to thank Gary Dlum. I hope I'm saying that right. For leaving us a 5-star review in the Australian iTunes store, and for letting us know, because we very rarely check non-US iTunes stores. So if you do that and you want us to give you a shout out, please let us know which store you left your review in, and we would be happy to give you a shout, just like I did for Gary Dlum. So thank you very much to him for his review and his 5 stars. And if you want to be awesome and you haven't done so already, give us a 5-star rating.
Well, before we go, here's a word from our sponsors.
Please visit Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, online store, or anything else you can think of. Go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial and use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. We'd like to thank Squarespace for their support of To The Journey and Trek.fm. Also, if you would like to personally support Trek.fm, please go to trek.fm/donate. There you can get exclusive themed badges and art prints that we use to thank you for your contribution, and their original illustration by Tobu Ushi. Everything you donate to Trek.fm is used to cover the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring you this programming every week.
Next week, we are going to do one of our fun lists, because we enjoy our lists on To The Journey, but this is going to be slightly different. It's not a top three. We are going to discuss what we would choose for a 5-episode marathon, our must-haves that are absolutely essential, why we would choose them, and in what order they would appear.
And it's going to be hard to try and count the 2-parters as the 2 episodes.
Yep. We're going to have to keep that in mind. I don't think it's going to be an easy decision. I think it's going to be actually a lot harder than it looks, but I cannot wait to find out what you guys choose. But unfortunately, we got to wait a week because we got to wrap this one up. That's next week. And until then, this has been To The Journey.
To the Journey!